All right, call order.
Supervisors, Mayo.
Present.
Borkowski.
Here.
DeBruin.
Here.
Schmidt.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Weishon.
Here.
Cesars.
Here.
Broderick.
Here.
Dmitrievich.
Here.
Rice.
Here.
Roma West.
Present.
Jerzyk.
Here.
Lipscomb.
Here.
Sanfilippo. Thomas.
Present.
Harris.
Here.
Biddle.
Present.
Oz.
Here.
Mr. Chairman.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay.
I saw Sanfilippo.
Terry, you're up.
Mr. Chairman, what you have in front of you today, and first of all, I want to, on behalf of the staff, thank you for calling this meeting of the Committee of the Whole, which we had really asked for after we compiled this document. What you have in front of you is a resolution ordinance to amend Chapter 1 of the county ordinances, which are the rules of the county board. And first thing I want people to know is the digest that was submitted today, which had the word drafts crossed out and final put in, is not the product of sloppy staff work. That is the product of a glitch in the Legistar system. And this is the only way that staff was able to put the digest together with the proper date on it, and that glitch is being addressed. What's in front of you is a report and an ordinance in response to an adopted county board resolution. The resolution was adopted several years ago. It has taken a considerable period of time to get a report in response to that resolution in front of the county board. It's been worked on over the years by many individuals, including people who are no longer here, including former Corporation Counsel Bill Domina, Bob Andrews from that office, Tim Shawey from that office, Lori Henning, Dee Hervey, Beth Welchman, Bob Murphy, people that used to be on our staff. It's something that has been somewhat ongoing. The effort was led by Corporation Counsel since they were listed first in the resolution, but over the course of time, with a number of lawsuits and other issues that were being dealt with, this was something that we were working on but never quite got to the forefront as the top priority item. I didn't ask the new Corporation Counsel to come up and present this, since it was really the product of the work group over a period of time. And as kind of the last one standing from the original group, I'm here to present the document to you today. What I'd like to do, if it's okay with the committee, is walk through the document and identify the significant changes, if you will, page by page and section by section, before the committee, you know, takes any other action, if that's okay with you, Chairman.
This way.
Starting on page 2 of the ordinance, there is a new section called Preamble. This is a section that's modeled after similar ordinances and other legislative bodies, just to kind of apply to the county board. Below that is kind of a restructuring of how we refer to the annual meeting and regular meetings, so that we haven't really crossed off language indicating when we meet. We've just kind of moved it from one section to the next. So that was really kind of a reordering. At the top of page 3, there is a section that addresses the schedule of county board meetings, which really reflects current practice. Which is that the county board chairman at the beginning of a term approves a calendar for meetings soon after that term begins through the rest of that year, and then subsequently approves a calendar for the remainder of the term later that year. This codifies that in the ordinance.
Terry, read the changes in red.
All of them, Mr. Chairman?
All red, yeah, all of them.
Okay.
Read the changes.
Would you like me to go back to the page 2 then? Okay, the preamble states, we, the members of the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors, pursuant to Wisconsin statutes and the general ordinances of Milwaukee County, and to achieve the order and decorum that expedite the transaction of business and maintain the free and open discussion which guarantee democracy for our nation and good government for the citizens of our county, do hereby submit ourselves to be governed in our deliberations by the following rules of procedure. That's
okay.
The preamble.
I just want to know if anyone got any questions, we can come back to it. But anyone got any questions on that, Supervisor Rice, you have a question?
Just to be clear, we're going to do these, raise all of our questions as we go by.
I'll put a mark that there's a question. So if you got a question of it, let me know. Okay. Go ahead.
In section 1.01 under meetings, regular is struck and annual is inserted for meetings. There's language that is struck and language that is really moved from another section, which says, for the purpose of considering reports of the Committee on Finance and Audit and Committee on Personnel on new positions for the next fiscal year, as well as recommendations for amendments to the executive's budget, the county board shall reconvene no less than 60 minutes following the noon lunch hour recess or by consensus of the county board.
Okay, if anybody got any questions, then I'll come back to it. With a question, I'll mark there's a question. What I'm going to do is go all the way back, and I'm going to check all the marks. If there's no marks, I'll move forward. If there are marks, then I'll call for whoever have a question. Okay? We'll do it in that fashion. Yes, Supervisor.
Mr. Chair, we have some amendments. Is it necessary that we follow the amendments or those will automatically be taken up?
Those automatically will be taken up at the end of him going through it.
Right.
And then what we'll do is after we do that, we'll go through the amendments and see if there's any question mark with the amendment comparative. And if not, we'll move forward. Everybody got that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go ahead, Terry.
At the bottom of page 2, section 101B, is a paragraph that inserts the word regular meetings of the county board and states that they shall be scheduled generally on a Thursday within the county board meeting schedule.
Yes. Which one is that? B?
Section 101B, right?
Okay, I just put a mark here. Okay.
At the top of page 3, this is language really kind of moved around. It says the county board chairperson shall, this is the language relating to the schedule of the meetings of the county board after the beginning of a new term. The county board chairperson shall provide to the county board following the first meeting of the board after the election of supervisors a schedule of county board meetings for the remainder of the year and by September 15 a schedule of county board meetings for the remainder of the term up to and including the first organizational meeting of the next term. The digest agenda for each county board meeting shall be established by the county board chairperson or in his or her absence by the first vice chairperson or the second vice chairperson.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have a question on B. Will you strike
you
on
got a question on that?
Yep.
Okay, we'll come back to it. All right, next.
In section C on that page, there's just language added under special meetings. The request shall identify the purpose of such meeting and shall include reference to such other items as may be required by law, ordinance, or board action.
Okay.
Under section 1.02, meeting organization, language is added that just says shall be for the purpose of organizing the county board. And at the bottom of that paragraph, upon election of a chairperson, the chairperson shall immediately preside over the remainder of the meeting. This also strikes language that is old language that relates to the progression of who would chair the very start of the meeting. And what the ordinance has said in the past is that it would be chaired by the former chairman, if still a supervisor, then the first vice chairman, then the second vice chairman, and then if none of them are still in office, then by the county clerk. This just simplifies that and goes directly to the county clerk. As soon as a chairperson is elected, that chair would come up and chair the meeting, which in most cases is very quickly into the meeting.
Go ahead.
The bottom of the page, 1.02B is a substantive change that back in 2006, the county board amended the ordinance relating to removal of a chairman in the middle of a term, and the amendment included for cause and a 3/5 vote of the board. During discussion with Corp Counsel as well as others on this, because for cause is not defined anywhere in the ordinance. It is a difficult thing to determine, to implement, and it was decided that it would be better to recommend to the board that they change this to simply a two-thirds vote. It simplifies that process, still makes it difficult to do, certainly within the realm of possibility, but makes it a cleaner process moving forward.
Question.
All right, next, go ahead.
At the top of page 4 of that same section is, again, changed, consistent with what I just talked about, where 3/5 is deleted to a 2/3 majority in a couple of instances on line 162 and again on line 174. And then down below under section 3, conduct of election, where 2/3 is inserted instead of 3/5. Down below that, on a section starting in line 193 is deleted from the ordinance because it's really a reference to a resolution. It's adopted resolution that's in the administrative manual on the process for electing a chairperson, and it seemed, you know, repetitive, if you will, to include it because it's already in effect in another place.
Mr. Chairman, where is the other place that's in effect? You state that. We should know where it's located.
It's adopted resolution 72-434, so it's in county board proceedings. It's also in the county administrative manual.
So, Mr. Chair, so we don't need to have this in our own ordinance that we know exactly versus have to look for it? All right.
Page 5. Top of page 5 under section 2 is a section on what is allowed and not allowed in county board meetings. And it really is updated to include things like photographers and camera operators, radio and television, provided they observe general rules of decorum. And at the bottom, there's a language on placing not being able to place items on the railing, except the placement of county board digests or other pertinent information by county board staff during county board meetings. And if anybody does that, they'd be asked to cease such action or be removed. There's also here striking the language of former members on line 217. So under the current ordinance, former members of the county board could walk on the floor without the approval of the body. This would strike that and require, just like other non-county supervisors or staff, that it would require the approval of the chairman of the board for people to walk out on the floor.
Terry, did you guys consider phones, photographs, cameras, operation phones? Did you consider phones as being part of that?
I can't recall if we specifically talked about telephones.
I'm going to probably recommend that.
Okay. There's a section that's fairly archaic on county board staff that was deleted starting on line 229. Below that, section 1.03 relates to opening of the meeting, and codifying what we do, which is basically have a pledge of allegiance and a moment of silent prayer, and sometimes an invocation offered by somebody in the clergy, and then language relating to that being done without discrimination as to race, gender, creed, or religious affiliation. And then it states that regular meetings may be opened with an invocation. Below that is a roll call, and there's just a clarification of who is doing the excused of persons, and that's by the chairperson, and that's mentioned in a couple of spots. On the top of page 6, the order of the business of the board is changed to reflect the actual order of business as we included in the digest of the county board. And just over time, that order you know, changed somewhat from when the ordinance was, this section of the ordinance was originally created, and it really reflects the order that we actually do things. At the bottom of page 6, under voting, there's a section that relates to excuse from voting. There was language in there that it required the affirmative vote of a majority of the board for a member to be excused from voting, which is the same as abstaining on an item. This ordinance change would delete that language and simply state that instead a member wishing to be excused should make a specific request to do so as to a brief verbal statement as to the reason for making the request, and that could be something as simple as I have a conflict and don't wish to vote on this item. This was a change that was actually suggested by our previous corporation counsel because, in his opinion, it is not up to the board to allow a supervisor to be in or not in a conflict of interest situation. That is up to that individual supervisor. And so that's why the majority vote language was struck here.
Which one is that now?
104B.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, moving on to page 7, there's just some slight language added relating to roll call votes when they're obligatory, with the chairperson voting last, and that all members be in the board room when voting. Below that is those items when a roll call is taken, and one of those is each committee report, and added is and any proposed amendments thereto to make clear that that's part of that. There's a section deleted under section 4, any question at the request of any member, which request may be made after a voice vote but before the next question is stated or a motion made, which the work group thought was convoluted, difficult to understand, and unnecessary given the other items here. Under section D, these are measures that require a two-thirds vote. Added to that is receipt of revenue appropriation transfers, which really just reflects what state law requires anyway, so it's just kind of a reminder that that is one of the items that we do two-thirds votes on. Below that, under section E, to clarify, which is also a statutory reference, temporary borrowing. Temporary borrowing under 67.12 with stats requires a three-fourths vote of members elect to be adopted. Below that, at the very bottom, motions that are in order for non-budgetary vetoes. This is any veto at a regular meeting that doesn't have anything to do with the budget. Lay on the table was changed to lay over, and the reason for that is to lay on the table is essentially to postpone indefinitely or to kill, which really does not allow for a county exec's veto to be actually considered and dealt with by the county board. Our previous corporation counsel had stated to us that you can lay an item over, but you need to bring it back, and at least in some reasonable short period of time, you actually have to deal with a veto. To lay on the table would not do that. To lay over would. So that's why that language was changed. To refer to corporation counsel is a similar motion to lay over because it comes back at the next meeting. So in both of those cases, it would be back in front of you at the very next meeting. So it's not like you've delayed it a considerable period of time. And then we've added language to say that if it is referred to a committee, which is also language we left alone, it shall be taken up at the next meeting of the committee and reported to the board at its next meeting, consistent with that idea that vetoes have to be dealt with in a fairly short period of time. There's a section here on changing votes during meetings, which really reflects current practice. It states meetings members may change their votes from aye to nay or from nay to aye on any matter prior to the chairperson announcing the vote. Once the results of a vote are announced, any member wishing to change their vote or to be recorded as voting when such votes vote does not affect the outcome, shall ask consent of the body. If any member objects to the request shall be voted on and shall be approved if supported by a majority of members voting. Section 1.05 relates to speaking at meetings and has very minimal changes there on line 410, where we delete obtaining leave of the majority and just state permission from the majority. Section 1.06, departure from meeting. Currently, the ordinance reads that no member, which means no supervisor, shall walk between the chairperson and a member who has the floor. This adds staff or any other individual who's on the floor who should also not do that. Section 1.07, there are no changes. Section 1.08 on the bottom of page 9 relates to specific motions. And the language at the bottom that's added says, and shall be noticed on the next county board digest. It's just fairly straightforward language. On page 10, there were a couple of things that were changed slightly after the first version of this was sent to supervisors a week ago, and this is one of those. Members present and voting, it just said members before, and just to clarify what that means, members present and voting. In other places, down in section D, under division of the question, such parts may be separated for consideration by the board rather than can. It's not necessary, but it's allowable. Under section E, this relates to amendments to amendments. And we just changed the name supervisor to member to be consistent with other language. At the bottom, section F is just clarifying language to appeal the decision of the chairperson by a majority vote of the members present and voting. At the top of page 11, under motion to reject or place on file, there's just added language at the same meeting to clarify what that paragraph is about. Below that, under section 1.09, resolutions and ordinances, I think the draft that was sent out first, ordinance was struck on lines 540 and 541. That shouldn't have been. It should have been kept as every resolution or ordinance presented shall be in writing and shall have a title expressing, et cetera. Then there's added language. Every ordinance presented to the county board shall be approved as deformed by court counsel prior to being considered by the county board. So the change here is previously every resolution and every ordinance was to be approved as to form, only as to form, by corporation counsel. This changes that to really apply to ordinances, that the corporation counsel would approve ordinances as to form.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we'll come back to it.
On page 12, the significant language here was language suggested by our county clerk, and it's under section G, citations, which makes this somewhat, it still makes citations an action of the board, but handles that action in a more administrative manner. And the language that's added here under section 1 is, a supervisor may sponsor a citation on behalf of the county board to a particular person, group, or organization, or to commemorate a particular event or occasion as specified in the citation. Citations may be issued during any cycle or during any interim period of the board. Citations are issued without formal approval by vote of the board. Under the next section 2, the language that's added is citations may be used in place of resolutions or for commendations, congratulations, and condolences of persons, groups, or organizations, or to give recognition to unusual and important events or occasions, except that the use of citations may not be abused. The chairperson of the board may more specifically interpret this subsection. Under section 3, the language that is would be there with this change is, if desired by the issuing supervisor, a citation on behalf of the board may be co-authored by one or more other supervisors. And in the next section, a supervisor sponsoring a citation shall secure a request for citation form from the county board chairperson's office. Such form shall be completed with the necessary facts, signed, and delivered to the chairperson's office. The language in Section 5 reads, the county board chairperson shall sign a citation on behalf of the board. If so signed, it is considered approved by the board and shall be so recorded in the Journal of Proceedings by the county clerk. This issuing supervisor and any co-sponsor may also sign the citation. A copy of the finished citation shall be provided to the issuing supervisor, and another copy thereof shall be filed with the county clerk. Finally, Section 6, the language reads, citations may not be used for procedural matters or in place of resolutions memorializing Congress, but only when appropriate to express the feelings of the county board with reference to a person or event. So that's, again, a way of dealing with citations in a more of an administrative manner.
Question.
Section 110, under fiscal notes, there's just clarifying language to update the names of committees and departments.
110.1.
There's also one, there's an amendment.
Hold it.
110.1,
Supervisor. Okay, now what did someone else say now?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. On page 14, line 700, there's an amendment there.
Page 14, line 700?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just have that, have that checked out, so we come back to that.
Just a final thing on the bottom of page 13, the word.
You going back to 13 now?
Mr. Chairman,
trying to confuse me?
Mr. Chairman, I was on page 13. At the very bottom of the page, the word shall is struck and may inserted relating to agencies assisting the authors of resolutions with preparing a fiscal note.
All right. Don't forget I'm a team out for it. I'm just getting warmed up.
Page 14, Mr. Chairman, understanding committees, there's some language struck under Committee on Intergovernmental Relations to reflect pattern and practice. And there's language changed to the Committee of Whole, which has always been called Committee of Whole, and everybody says the whole, so we're making it the whole. And updating that, and to show you how old this, how long we've been working on this ordinance, from 25 members down to 18 members. And who's on that committee? It says chairperson being the chairperson of the county board and vice chairperson being the first vice chairperson of the county board. Under Section B, there's just clarifying language, seniority on the county board instead of on committees. This is the order of which is read because sometimes a member is on a committee, is off a committee, and is back on the committee, and it's hard to track that seniority. Seniority on the board is a much easier thing to track. Page 15. And continuing with this discussion of standing committees, Committee on Personnel, employee, we add benefits, update the language of the departmental name, and departmental policy of Department of Human Resources and Divisions of Labor Relations and Employee Benefits to show what those recent reorganizations were. Under Committee of Finance and Audit, there's language that is added on line 766, Department of Administrative Services, Divisions of Administration and Fiscal Affairs, Information Management Services, Procurement and Risk Management, Department of Human Resources, and Divisions of Employee Benefits and Labor Relations, in again, to reflect recent changes. Issuance number three, issuance of debt, was added since this is a function of the Finance Committee. Number seven, policy matters having a fiscal effect outside the current budget was added because that is a situation that is dealt with by the Finance Committee at times. Moving on to Committee on Health and Human Needs, It is changed to reflect health in addition to human services. And then the divisions of behavioral health, housing, economic support, delinquency and court services, disability services, management services, and the director's office, again, to reflect changes that have occurred in the department. And on page 16 at the top, there are some changes relating to some language struck relating to the old General Assistance Medical Program, which no longer exists, and language added relating to persons with disabilities in the Department of Administrative Services, all matters pertaining to the Department on Aging, all matters pertaining to the Department of Family Care, which is a fairly recent department that's been added, all matters pertaining to the County Executive's Veterans Service Office is added. Committee on Judiciary, Safety, and General Services, Department of Child Support Services, which is a change in that department's name. And then under Section 2, there's language added, including those for personal injuries and property damage. The committee has the authority to approve the payment of claims against the county in an amount not to exceed $10,000 and to recommend to the board to approve the payment of claims in excess of that amount, and that reflects state statutes. Down below under Section 5, Committee on Parks, Energy, and Environment, there's just some clarifying language on the section of environment, which used to be in Transportation and Public Works and is now moved to the Department of Administrative Services. Page 17, Section 6, this is Department of Transportation and Public Works and Transit, and it reflects, again, changes to include the Department of Transportation, and then the divisions of transportation services, fleet management, the transit and paratransit system, the Department of Administrative Services, facilities management division, including architectural, engineering, and environmental services, and sustainability section, which used to be in the Department of Public Works. So that's just clarifying what department that rests in now. On page 18, a section is added, all transportation matters pertaining to disadvantaged business enterprises, to reflect, you know, how our DBE program is overseen. Under Committee on Economic and Community Development, a similar section, Section 7, all policy matters pertaining to disadvantaged business enterprises, to reflect that's the parent committee of the Community Business Development Partners Office. Section 1.12, select committees, there's a slight change on the top of page 19. It just clarified that the membership of those committees is determined by ordinance resolution or the chairperson of the county board. Section 1.13 relates to committee meetings and regular committee meetings of the county of committees. And there's a section on line 978 that relates to if the meeting falls on the election day for a countywide election or special election of county board supervisor, then you would have to hold it on another day. At the bottom of that page, under special committee meetings, there's old language relating to 24-hour notice of special meetings. Unless for good cause, such notice is impossible, was struck and replaced with impracticable, because there's, you know, there could be a situation, for example, if you ask some staff person to come in on a Saturday and post something for a Monday morning meeting, it's not impossible, it is impracticable. It would be, you know, if you could have done that on Friday, it would have been better. So it addresses that type of situation.
Mr. Chairman? On the previous page, I forgot to mention page 17, section 6 and 7 on conservation.
Where are you?
On page 17, Mr. Chairman, I apologize I didn't mention 6 and 7. Please, if you put a check mark there, I appreciate it.
It's hanging a little bit behind.
Thank you, sir.
Should be a little farther up. What is it, page 17?
Yes, sir.
Which one you said, Supervisor?
6 and 7, please.
Thank you.
No problem. Are there any others?
On page 19, 1.13. I just have a question.
All right. We'll deal with that. Okay, well, we're on, what, 20 now?
We're on page 20 at the top, okay. Committee General Procedure. There's a sentence added, without a majority in attendance, a committee may consider informational items only. There's also language relating to updating to include electronic rather than just U.S. mail. And instead of the day before, listed 24 hours before to make it more precise. And then language at the end relating to deadlines as established by the respective committee chairpersons. Below that, under line 1035, a sentence is added, minority rules shall not apply to committee meetings. It's very difficult to use, you know, the one-third of committee membership minority rules in committee meetings. At the bottom of page 20 is a section on committee motions and voting procedure. This is codifying what we've had for years. Lori Henning used to keep something at the side of her, and other clerks did as well, called a quick reference guide, which identified all of these items. Things such as if a chairman of a committee wants to speak at length on an item, that they pass the gavel for the remainder of the item to the committee. But I'll read through them. Committee motions and voting procedure. 1. If an item is on the agenda for information only unless otherwise directed by the committee, a motion to place on file is not needed. The committee will just receive the item. However, if a motion is made and a roll call is taken, said item will be reported to the board. 2. If a motion to adopt an item fails, it will be reported to the board with a recommendation to reject. 3. To take any other action on an item after it has been rejected, a motion to reconsider must be made and passed. Only a supervisor who voted on the prevailing side of the rejection action can make the motion to reconsider. 4. If a motion to place on file or to reject fails, the matter is still before the committee and another motion shall be in order. 5. If a motion is to adopt, postpone indefinitely, place on file, or reject receives a tie vote in committee, the matter shall be reported to the county board without recommendation. 6. If a motion to refer, layover, or amend receives a tie vote, said motion fails and another motion is in order. 7. No motions or debate on motions shall be made from the chairperson. If the chairperson wishes to make or to speak at any length on a motion, the chairperson shall turn over the gavel to the vice chairperson or next senior member for the remainder of the item. This provision shall not prevent a chairperson from questioning a witness concerning testimony being presented to the committee. 8. Once a committee comes to order and attendance is taken to establish a quorum, any item on the agenda can only be removed by concurrence of a majority of the committee. Prior to the committee coming to order, an item can be removed by the chairperson. 9. Supervisors wishing to add their names as co-sponsors of resolutions or ordinances introduced by supervisors shall, prior to a committee's final vote on said resolution or ordinance, obtain the permission of the primary sponsor and be added if there is no objection from a member of the committee. If there is objection, a vote of the committee shall be taken regarding adding the co-sponsors. Uh, 114 committee reports under section A1, which relates to consideration of committee reports. There's language that should is struck and replaced with the word shall in terms of items being read by the county clerk in their entirety. If so requested by a supervisor and directed by the chairperson. Also, there's language added relating to when a committee report has been submitted. The question on the adoption of the committee report shall be put by the chairperson as a matter of course without awaiting a motion from the floor, which means we don't really need individual supervisors making motions. The committee report is in front of the board, and the question of its adoption is in front of the body. At the bottom of page 20,
going back to
21. Added, I'm sorry, 21. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
You're trying to confuse me. I know you are.
I'm trying.
Okay.
Shall the minority report be substituted for, instead of the majority report, just to clarify, we wrote recommendation of the committee. At the bottom of that page, a roll call should be taken is struck. That language is struck because it's already addressed in a previous section of the ordinance under section 1.04C. So that would be repetitive and is unnecessary in this spot. Page 22, and there's some updating language on line 135 relating to what the committee is called. Section 115, referring resolution, ordinance, or report for legal opinion. There's a clarification, the resolution, ordinance, or report shall not be re-referred again to the Corporation Council except by a majority vote. So the second time up, minority rules no longer apply is what that really means. And then there's a section below on the above rule shall not apply to, and again it's updating of the report on the finance and audit on the executive budget, and then finance and audit on new positions as well. Section 1.16 relates to requests relating to personnel matters, and again there's at the very bottom updated language on the name of the Finance and Audit Committee and the Department of Administrative Services, and that runs throughout the top of page 23 in a number of places. And this also adds language relating to next succeeding the regularly scheduled monthly meeting of the first Thursday in November. So that this relates to the budget time period when we're considering the budget, and that has to do with personnel actions. Under review of county board staff, by county board staff, there's just an updating on the name of the department and the committee as well. Moving over to page 24, language is changed on line 1266. Adjourn is struck and replaced with recess because we recess from time to time. If we were, if we adjourn, you really have to do a petition to. We had one situation, people may recall several years ago, when a committee chairman was rather upset with an item and wanted to say we're in recess, and he said we're adjourned, and it took us an effort to get the committee back because you adjourned, So this is a way of dealing with that, so that we're talking about recessing for a half hour, 10 minutes, or whatever it is for a short period of time, rather than actually adjourning. The bottom of page 24, communications reports, departmental requests, and reference files, clarifies what Corporation Council has always interpreted this ordinance to be, where it says within 5 days of receipt of a document, it must be referred within 5 business days. And so that is always how Mr. Domina had interpreted it, and we're clarifying and putting that right into the ordinance. On page 25 at the top, there's a new sentence in that same section which says, items that are for information only shall be addressed to the respective committee chairperson, and a copy shall be provided to the county board chairperson. This is consistent with pattern and practice. There's a couple of instances on this page, Mr. Chairman, committee, where the old language reflects the titles of positions at the county board. We used to have a committee clerk and several assistant committee clerks. That has been changed, where there's the position that used to be called committee clerk is now called chief committee clerk. And so a number of places you see the word chief, and that updates the language of the actual titles of positions. and at one point references other committee clerks as well.
So that chief could be a male or a female?
Mr. Chairman, I consider chief a generic term.
It would be a lot different if I was still running for chairman of the board. It would be a lot different in terms of chairman. This is a very objective piece of what you guys know that.
Mr. Chairman, I would remind committee, too, that I think three chief of staffs prior to me was Mary Newcomb, who was a chief of staff. So okay. I think she considered it applying to her as well as to men. Just to address the issue.
Okay. Having fun. Keep going.
Section 1.19 is just an updating of the name of the Finance and Audit Committee. Moving along to page 26. There's a section deleted, section 1.21, with the guidance of Corporation Counsel. We deleted the section on treatment of doubtful claims. Section 1.21, the new section, consideration and confirmation of appointments. This references Chapter 17. It says individuals set forth under Section 17.30 county ordinances or appointments by the county executive or county board chairperson, that those come before the board for confirmation. At least 5 business days prior to the date of the meeting, they are notified by the appointing authority. And then at the bottom, the county clerk shall notify the county executive or county board chairperson of the rejection or confirmation of appointments. The next section is section 1.22, publication of proceedings, and just very simplifies the language to simply say the proceedings of the county board shall be published in electronic form, period. Section 1.23, repeal, amendment, or correction of rules. There's no real change here, but I want to point out one thing. This entire document is coming to the Committee of the Whole because the adopted resolution by Supervisor Cesars and Supervisor Holloway so many years ago directed that it come to the Committee of the Whole. There is, however, a section of the ordinance which says any change to these rules go to the Judiciary Committee. I might suggest that at the conclusion of all this today that one appropriate action to address that would be for the Committee of the Whole to refer this matter, including their recommendations, to the Judiciary Committee, where it could schedule these matters at its next meeting, and it could come that way through the Judiciary Committee back to the County Board. I've talked to Supervisor Johnson about that, and he had no problem with following that procedure.
Well, it could go direct to the board.
It could go directly to the board, but that would not be consistent with this section of the ordinance.
Getting old in your age.
That's your chief of staff.
But he did clear it with Supervisor Johnson.
I don't have any problem. You don't
report this. I don't. I just wanted to needle you.
I had him for 10 years.
It's a needle.
He know the deal. Go ahead, Terry. Pick it on you.
Moving along to page 27, there's nothing really there except a couple of letter changes and other things. Page 28, supervisor amendments at the bottom of that page, or bottom of that section A, rather. It relates to suspension of the rules. Unless this has to do with amendments being forwarded, budgetary amendments, unless the sponsoring supervisor requests that said amendments not be forwarded. So this is... During the budget process, when somebody has an amendment that goes to the Finance and Audit Committee and the committee rejects it, they may make a decision, well, I don't want to move forward with that, and this allows them to do that. There's a new section, executive budget vetoes, because the work group realized that this was not really addressed in the section on regular county executive vetoes. So new language was added here. The budget as adopted with amendments under subsection 4B above shall be presented to the county executive, who may approve it in whole or in part. If the budget or any portion thereof is vetoed by the county executive and returned to the county board shall reconsider the veto at a meeting specially notified and scheduled for that purpose, not less than 6 days, Sundays excepted, after the budget as adopted under subsection 4B has been presented to the county executive in conformity with Wisconsin statutes 59.17 sub 6. At that meeting, the county clerk shall read those items or appropriations as to which the county executive has exercised his veto authority, along with the county executive's veto message. The chairperson shall then put the following question to the county board. Shall the item, as approved by the county board in the budget resolution and vetoed by his/her honor the county executive, be adopted? If you wish to override the veto, you vote aye. If you wish to sustain the veto, you vote no. The county board has a duty to promptly, and I'm going to stop. There's four sections here where we have the word reconsider, and our sage Mr. Boltman noted that and said you really mean consider rather than reconsider. So I would ask that we just do a typo Scrivener correction on that. Doesn't really require an amendment. We can do that. Where the word appears four times in this paragraph, reconsider really should be the word consider. So it would read, the county board has a duty to promptly consider the county executive's budget vetoes. Therefore, section 1.04F, which governs procedure on other matters vetoed by the county executive, shall not apply to consideration of budget vetoes under this subsection. At the meeting under this subsection, motions to lay on the table and to refer to a committee shall be considered out of order. If the county board determines that the period of time between the return of the county executive's vetoes and the meeting scheduled under this subsection is so short that additional time is necessary to evaluate and consider the vetoes, or if some other exigent circumstance precludes immediate consideration of the vetoes at the meeting scheduled under this subsection, the county board may recess the meeting for a period not to exceed 48 hours. Next, under section 1.25, we've struck language with respect to resolutions or ordinances adopted by the county board to immediately notify the county officer, board, or commission concerned of the directive. This was, as I recall, a suggestion of the county clerk. And then we've added language, copy of the resolution or ordinance which was adopted to the county officer, board, or commission, and the county executive. It simplifies. It means the same thing, but it makes it a cleaner paragraph. Down below, we've reflected the name of the latest edition of Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised. We've added a new section, section 1.27, which Chairman Holloway has never asked me about and has never talked to me about, but in conversations I had with Corporation Counsel in the past, it reflects their verbal opinion, which is that the chairperson of the county board is the head of the department of the county board for purposes of having budgeting and personnel oversight authority over all county board staff, overseeing departmental operations, approving departmental expenditures, and submitting requested budgets. Other sections are renumbered. The very last section on page 30, which we call the Mrs. Rose section because County Supervisor Bernice Rose created this section on decorum. It has primarily been focused on committees, and so there is simply language that adds the county board as a whole to the decorum language. So it's not just committees that this process should be followed, but also county board meetings as well.
Okay, what we'll do, I guess we need to go back. I don't know which one we need to go back first, Terry. Do we go back on the resolutions or do we go back on the questions?
Mr. Chairman, I might suggest you take up the amendments that are in front of you first, unless, you know, you and your colleagues would like to do it a different way, because I think there are seven amendments.
And now what we're saying is...
Nine?
It's a...
It's multiplied since I last counted. There are nine amendments.
Okay. What we're saying is, what you're saying is making a request that this goes before the Judiciary Committee, right?
At the end of the meeting,
okay,
yes, sir.
If it goes before the Judiciary Committee, the supervisor's got another second kick at it, right?
Yes, sir.
which I didn't want, but since you have made that openly request, I will do that.
Just trying to follow the ordinance, Mr. Chairman.
I didn't know it was an ordinance. I remember us taking things in front of the committee of whole and go straight to the board. And I know we could do that. We've done that in reference to the parking lot and some lot of other little issues as well. But I don't have any problem with it. So you guys got an opportunity to have another kick at the cat. We get a chance to review this, and it won't be reflecting me. It'll be reflecting you guys who will be here. So make sure you do that. Now we have, I don't know what manner of, was Steve, do you know what manner the amendments come in?
Steve.
I said Steve. Did you hear me?
I heard Supervisor
Steve. I said it, but then I said Steve.
I heard Supervisor Steve.
Listen, and you will follow.
I don't understand. I want you to get straight now.
Your head follow.
I know you're ending very soon, but you need to get it right, because you'll be ending very soon.
Okay. No particular order?
They're not in order for how the ordinance is laid out. It's they're numbered in order for which the request is received.
So
they're numbered 1 through 9, Mr. Chairman.
So it's just 2. I have 2 packs, and I didn't have...
Chairman, are you putting them in the order of the line?
I'm putting them in order in reference to the amendment. I count for
the numbers.
Numbers.
Thank you.
That should be all of them.
Five. They gave me 2 packets. 7. 8.
Just
and
for clarity.
And mine, the extra one, I just had done. Then we'll have all of them together. Okay? Because I had 2 packets. All right, we'll start off with number 1. Supervisor De Bruin, would you like to read what you have made some changes to, Supervisor?
Sure, Mr.
Chairman.
And
what reason you made changes to it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an amendment number 1, and it deals with the section 110 dealing with fiscal notes. And on my packet, that's starting on page 13,
correct,
going into 14. The actual amendment change is starting on line 700, which is the top of page 14, and it's listed as subsection 2. What is in the actual resolution before you would continues the requirement that we've had a long time that resolutions have fiscal notes. But the current language does not require that substitute resolutions have fiscal notes. You might note right away that you won't find the term substitute resolution. In this language, substitute amendment is a substitute resolution. So what I was interested in doing was continuing to have regular resolutions have fiscal notes, but also substitute resolutions to have fiscal notes. And so to leave regular amendments alone as they currently have been done where they don't require fiscal notes. So the amendment does on subsection 2, it adds the words after shall apply to measures or submissions, it deletes the words and not substitute amendments and amendments or minority reports, and changes it instead to substitute amendments and minority reports only and not to amendments. Minority reports are the same thing as a substitute resolution. When a committee adopts by a majority a resolution that goes to the board, if other minority members of the committee object to that, they legally can forward to the board of a minority report. That minority report is a substitute resolution. So that we didn't want to have a situation where members of a committee submitting a minority report don't have to submit a fiscal note, or a fiscal note doesn't have to be with their resolution, but if there's a substitute resolution on the board floor, then those supervisors have to have a fiscal note. So the bottom line is it just adds a requirement that fiscal notes be added to any substitute resolutions.
Supervisor De Bruin, you actually made your point about a minute and a half ago.
I don't
see Terry making any facial move. I think he totally agrees with you. Okay. Am I right? Is there anyone else have any misunderstanding of Supervisor De Bruin's
amendment? May I move approval, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I'd like to move approval.
Wait, I still have a question.
So, I mean, the only difference, for instance, we had this example a couple weeks ago, and what we did was we laid the item over temporarily, and at your request, staff prepared it. The onus is on staff to provide the fiscal note, right? I mean, there would be nothing procedurally about this that would allow the substitute to be blocked by the absence.
Well, I think it's not only on staff. I think it's also on the supervisor and staff, because you could know that there is a fiscal note, and they put it on the amendment, or you could not know it and would just be making a recommendation. So I think it's on both staff and staff to know whether it's a fiscal note.
I guess what I'm raising is,
I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, I appreciate it. What I'm raising is the possibility, Mr. Chairman, that that offering the substitute could be effectively blocked by, for some reason, the fiscal note not being prepared, or and I think that there are legitimate reasons why you might be bringing a substitute at a late date.
Good point. Let me ask Supervisor De Bruin to respond to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the supervisors involved know that they're going to be putting forward a substitute resolution, normally there's enough time for them, if they know that the requirement is there, which they should if we adopt this language, that a substitute, that a fiscal note must be required. That if for some reason the putting together a substitute resolution is much more last minute or minor, I mean, last minute, then there may be a delay by having that requirement. I've never seen members of the staff refuse to put together a fiscal note. So if that's your concern, that somehow they might be influenced and not.
All right, I'm going to get staff involved in this. Steve, you see a problem here? Come on up to the mic. You prepare almost all of the fiscal notes.
Mr. Chairman. Supervisor, I don't see it as being very complex. Usually the substitute resolutions, they're not usually making dramatic changes. Oftentimes, though, we do substitute resolutions in place of amendments because they're easier to do. Mm-hmm. Just from a staff standpoint, putting them together. But so most of the time, that's the reason. I don't see any problem with getting a fiscal note done in a short order.
Okay. All right. Okay. Do you call for approval?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
It's been called for approval. Are there any questions? All signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. It's done.
You don't need a roll call for it?
Well, did anybody say no? If somebody would say no, then I'd have called for the roll.
Oh, this is a new way of doing it now?
Okay. Well, no. Somebody would have said no, then
I
would.
Is this how the meeting's going now that we don't have roll call?
Well, I am the chairman so far. And if there would have been a no, I then would have called for the roll and find out who said no. Yeah. That's simple. All right. Catch up, fella. Supervisor Jerson?
You have way too much fun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second amendment relates to line 826 of the packet. It's with respect to Judiciary Committee, and we've had...
Supervisor, could you tell us where this is located?
Yes, sir. That's what I'm doing, line 826.
Page 16.
Page 16?
Number 2, under the number 4.
Okay, sorry, Supervisor. I'm with you now. Go ahead.
We've just had this illustration regarding the Waukee County versus the sheriff. In terms of clarifying the language within our ordinances as to the powers of the board with regard to both initiating and responding or answering to lawsuits and claims, And the proposed amendment removes the word review and inserts instead the word approval. So it's approval of all matters pertaining to, and then we insert the language initiating or answering. Initiating, you generally would be the plaintiff. Answering, you'd be the defendant. Initiating or answering suits or claims by or against the county. And to clarify, this is subject to full board review and approval, thanks to Supervisor Wyshon, who asked for that clarification. We inserted that because it's not the committee that gets to do it alone. It is subject to full board approval.
Is that what you mean, Supervisor?
Yes.
Okay, having fun. All right, go ahead. We're all together.
We're all together, and we're trying to be inclusive.
Okay.
And then the next part of this really is the same language that was already included in the initial amendment, the red language, including those for personal injuries and property damage. The committee has the authority to approve the payment of claims against the county in an amount not to exceed $10,000. So it's just the committee there on the small claims. That's just the Judiciary Committee approving those. And to recommend to the board to approve the payment of claims in excess of that amount. So that's the change, Mr. Chairman, and I would so move.
Okay, Supervisor Rice?
Two questions, I guess, if I could propose these to the Corporation Council.
Sure. Corporation Council, be alert, please, come up.
I support what I understand to be the intent here, and it was illustrated in this most recent dust that we had with the sheriff. My question is whether it is perhaps a little overbroad, and that is, I don't know all of the suits that the county engages in. There may be a whole host of things that take place in children's court or in child support enforcement that I'm not aware of, and I'm wondering if this would bring all of those actions under the purview of the Judiciary Committee and kind of bog down the process or require board and committee approval of all of those legal actions that the county engages in. That's one question, and maybe I can answer that and come back.
Okay. Court Counsel, you ready to respond?
Sure. Sure, Mr. Chairman. So in response to the first question about all matters, I would agree that the language is overly broad, and it could bog down the system. In addition, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer the fact that I think this language may be an issue because we have a court order from Judge Carroll that indicates that the county executive has the authority to initiate lawsuits under Chapter 59. And so I don't even know if he would be able to approve this language and bind a future county executive to this when it's statutorily permitted for the county executive to do what's in Chapter 59.
Have we got a question on that, Supervisor Jersey?
Well, Mr. Chair, I did review Judge Carroll's opinion, and she doesn't just limit it to Chapter 59. She includes the ordinances. I do think all matters, approval of all matters is limited by the words by or against the county. For example, the DA brings lots of lawsuits really on behalf of the state. That would not in any way relate to that. Children's courts matters against juveniles, etc., again, generally are by the state. This is approval of all matters pertaining to claims by or against the county. Now, that being said, I know Corp Counsel just got this yesterday. I found out just yesterday that we had to have these amendments in writing. So I would be more than willing to move that we lay this matter over to Judiciary, give Corp Counsel an opportunity to look at this more carefully, and I would ask that they give a written opinion regarding their position on this so we can review it and get this clarified. That review language, by the way, was language that was changed not too long ago, and Mr. Session might be able to help us on that. And I think it's an unfortunate word that did not clarify position, and we again have had this lawsuit that Judge Carroll gave an opinion on, which again raised this whole question. I think we need to do a much better job of tightening up that language look at Chapter 59, look at our ordinances, and then get something that hopefully we can all live with. I'm certainly not trying to create a problem for Port Council's office. So I would move to lay this over to Judiciary and ask that we get a written opinion from Port Council on this language, or if they want to make some other recommendations, that they do that so we can discuss it again.
Just so as a right, you agree with that? Okay. We'll motion on laying this over to.
You can't lay over an amendment. She can withdraw it and then reoffer it at Judiciary.
Yes, she'll have opportunity. Okay. All right.
Well, I would like Corp Counsel to address this language, so I don't know how I'm going to do that if I can't lay the amendment over.
Well, Corp Counsel, you heard it will be brought before the Judiciary Committee. You need to be prepared to respond to it. It will be on the Judiciary agenda. Well, Supervisor Johnson.
Yes, sir.
That'll be on the Judiciary agenda for you to have opportunity to respond to it. Okay? Supervisor. Okay, I'm going to get back to you because he's still on the front line. Are you okay?
It's related to this item, Mr. Chairman, and that is it's in a different section, though. It's in 1.28.
Well, it's in a different section. I'm going to have to come back to you because...
it's related to how they might resolve this issue.
Okay, go ahead. We'll see what you
can do. It's not a proposed change, but okay. in section 1. In the new section 1.28, section 2...
What page is that on?
It's page 29. It's lines 1544.
Page 29?
29. Line 1544 to 1548.
Wait, let's get to 29.
I just, you know...
Page and what item?
It's the newly numbered 1.28. It's different in that it's related to appeals and civil actions, but I bring it up because it's an instance where there's an exception to the rule where the county executive and the chairman can proceed on a matter, and then there's a notice requirement to the county board, and I offer that as possibly... a similar solution. To
Supervisor Jersey, to Supervisor Rice, you got any to respond on that one?
I do see what Supervisor Lipscomb is mentioning. I also would say the number two from 826 through 845, it also includes some additional areas to clarify, including actions required by state statute. I mean, some of those things do limit the language. I think if we're going to get Corp Counsel to review this and give us an opinion, I'll be satisfied with that, Mr. Chairman. I just think we need to get this nailed down because this keeps coming back.
All right. Okay. Well, Corp Counsel, you have a clear idea of what Supervisor want from you?
I do.
Okay. Thank you very much. Supervisor Rice, do you have something for Corp Counsel as well?
The other question just deals with the process for approval of small claims, and we've had a process, I don't know if it's formal or informal, in the past in Judiciary where we, I think, have delegated certain authority to Corporation Counsel for claims, I think, below 5,000. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if it's necessary for us to codify that in the ordinance or how we want to approach that.
Court Counsel, you have an idea on. I understand the 5,000. We usually don't even respond to 5,000.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, right now our authority is 500 within our office.
And your authority is what?
500.
500. Okay. So, anything else has to come to the board?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is that by ordinance? That's my question.
It's by statute.
It's by statute that gives the Corporation Counsel the authority to settle claims
under 500.
500.
Okay.
I'm satisfied with that. Okay. Thank you. This will be brought to the Judiciary Committee, hammered out with the ideal of what Supervisor Lipson had included and Supervisor Jersey and Supervisor Rice, and hopefully we'll be able to. Something we can vote on. Okay? Is that satisfactory to you, sir? item number three, Supervisor Jersey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, item number three, relates in some ways to amendment number seven. I want to just explain the thinking on this. This relates to line 727.
What page was your okay, y'all?
Line 727,
page
which
14?
Is page 14.
Mm-hmm.
And it the 727 is the Committee on Intergovernmental Relations, in which there was a strikeout of the current makeup of that committee, which previously required chairperson of the county board, first vice chair, second vice chair, and four standing committee chairs. Now, I did talk to Mr. Cooley. He pointed out that part of the problem was you could have a situation where you've got standing committee chairs that are also first vice chair, second vice chair, et cetera. I clarified that by indicating that they're also not serving as first or second vice chair. But more importantly, the reason I wanted to suggest we go back to keeping the leadership of the county board, that is the chairperson, the first vice chair, the second vice chair, and the four standing committees, relates to amendment number seven. And if you could just look at that for a moment. Amendment number seven added the final sentence, which indicated that final offers and mandatory arbitration must be approved by both the majority of the Committee on Personnel and a majority of the Committee on Intergovernmental Relations before submission as a final offer and mandatory arbitration. Let me explain my concern.
I want to respond to that when you finish, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a situation with regard to binding arbitration, and that still refers to both the sheriff and the firefighters, that you could have a bare majority of the personnel committee, that is four members of the board, submitting final offers that bind the entire county to the provisions made in that final offer. When I was serving as chairperson of personnel, I had discussions with Greg Grotz and others and took it upon myself to try to find out what the city of Milwaukee, for example, did on submission of final offers. And their committee for submission of final offers is made up of the mayor and all the chairpersons of the standing committees. That's how they make a final offer. Now, I'm not necessarily trying to mirror that, but I do think it's a concern, and I have a concern, that a bare majority of a committee, which is a small minority of the full board, can bind the entire county in final offers in arbitration. And I think it needs to be addressed. I do not think that's a good practice. My suggestion, and I'm more than willing to let others make some similar ideas, but if you include the membership of the leaders of the board back to the Committee on Intergovernmental Relations the way it was originally formulated, and then include final offers for mandatory arbitration being approved, you at least then get the majority of two committees with the leadership of the board. That was my thinking in doing this. And I know Mr. Session did have a few concerns. Mr. Chairman, if you want to hear from Mr. Session, I did want to at least bring this before this body as an amendment to get the issue on the table. I don't have to say this is the only way to do it, but I think it is a fairly creative way to do it, because you then get the membership and the leadership of the intergovernmental committee approving that final offer that the personnel committee has put together before it then goes to the final arbitration. And if the chairman would like to hear from Mr. Session and some of
sure.
the concerns he expressed.
Mr. Session, would you come up, please? Let's hear that great intellect that you have.
Mr. Chairman, I don't really have any comments on amendment number 3, which is currently in front of the committee, on amendment number 7 with respect to moving final offers through various committees. The arbitration procedure is complicated and protracted. Final offers surface in multiple forms. There are final offers and final offers and final offers prior to being certified by the WERC as the final offer. I was more concerned about how this would work in practice. I think we can refine the language. I think we can get to a point where we can address what the supervisor is after. But I don't know that it's fit today to put in some language to that effect.
Well, you hear that the supervisor is acting that all the chairmen of the committee be on intergovernment relations, and that could be done. It'd be more difficult because we have downsized from 25 to 19. We have some people serving 3-4 committees. With that, clearly, have people serve 4. I don't have any problem with that, but that's probably the primary reason we started deviating from that, because we had downsized and did not have the other people to fill the slots. But I don't have any problem with that. However you guys want to do it, it's fine with me.
Mr. Chairman, I quite frankly don't care about doing amendment number 3 if it wasn't related to amendment number 7. That was my main impetus for doing that. I think it's a creative way of getting leadership to weigh in on that final offer. And if the chairman prefers, I would ask that we follow the same procedure that we're following for the lawsuit, just the amendment that came before. Lay this over till we get to judiciary, permit Mr. Session and perhaps Mr. Grady to look at a better way of doing this, if there is a better way of doing this. I think we should be very concerned, though, about the liability of the county with regard to these final offers when a very bare majority of a single committee can bind us in that way.
Okay, were you talking about the personnel and the percentage of the chairmen that will be on intergovernment relations combining, making a decision? Is that what you're concerned with?
To refer this to personnel with the response on these amendment proposals from Mr. Session, working with Mark Lady, would be very satisfactory to me, Mr. Chairman.
You guys got something you want to share?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted clarification. Where everything else in here, we're referring to the Judiciary Committee.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
So the Judiciary Committee with intergovernment relationship requests is to have all intergovernment relations to be chairmen of committees. Is that what we're getting?
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, would be the language here that suggests that the committee of intergovernmental relations consists of chairs of committees would be referred to the Judiciary Committee for consideration when it takes up other changes to Chapter 1.
Okay, well, you realize that intergovernmental relations is not set up all chairs of committees, but we'll get there. We'll see if you guys want to do that, but I tell you that that's how we started moving toward it, to try to make committees, a balance of committees, when we downsized down to 6, that impact on us being able to do some of those things without adding additional committees, but I don't have a problem with that. Supervisor Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to Amendment 3, I would be in favor of Amendment 3. The Intergovernmental Relations Committee does not meet all the time, but if you've got 7 members, including the chairman, the first vice chair, the second vice chair, and 4 standing committee chairs, with all the legislation that we have to deal with respect to Madison, we have people who lobby. We have our staff who lobbies, and I know they work fervently. They work feverishly in order to get things done. It's important for us to know what needs to be done. If 4 committee chairs, besides the leadership of the county board, are on that committee, then I would think that would facilitate a lot of work being done as it relates to communications with and interactions with the legislature and the governor and others. So I would be in favor of Amendment 3, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Will we refer to, it should come up on your committee.
Can we refer 3 and 7 together?
Yeah. The main reason you guys have not gotten in trouble with that is because the chairman has been involved in all those decisions and working with those committee members. It's true. It's true. You'll find when I'm gone where the gaps will be. Work the hell out of the chairman.
This is to fill the gaps, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Amendment number 4. Supervisor Jersey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an amendment to line 878.
What page is that, Supervisor Jersey?
I'm trying to find out for you, Chairman.
17.
All right.
And this amends number 7 under the Parks Committee, removing the test, if you will. The Parks Committee will hear number 7 reading all matters relating to the conservation of air, water, energy, and all other resources, period. And I took out which are being consumed in such wasteful manner that the supplies will be exhausted or so diminished that future generations will suffer hardship. I would suggest to you that is a meaningless, unmeasurable test of when such matters can come before a committee, and we should just leave it all matters relating to the conservation of air, water, energy, and other resources, period. It gives them the ability to hear matters with regard to those conservation issues, and I would so move.
Terry, I see a little smirk on your face. You have something to say?
No, this was such sweet, archaic language that the work group decided to just leave it alone.
All right. So you work with a guy for 10 years. You can look at his face and tell what's going on.
Well, I'm an example of that future generation that's already been corrupted by all that wasteful exhaust, et cetera.
Supervisor Jersey, I'll always remember you. Every time I look at a bus, I think of the bicycle in front.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Or the black thereof.
Okay. Amendment number 5.
Are we approving that?
Okay. Supervisor Demetri Abridge.
No, we need to vote on 4.
A voice vote.
I'm not referring this one to anybody.
Signify by saying aye. Did anybody opposed to it?
Aye.
Is there any noes?
No.
You said no? Okay. Call a roll call.
No, I'm just joking.
Don't play with me.
No.
But you can, you hear a voice where I'm the only no. You know I'm the no.
Mr. Chairman, am I taking a roll, or is it going to be 19?
No.
Thank you very much.
This joke is cured. Supervisor Demetri Abridge?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you want to refer to page 20,
you skipped 5. You skipped number 5.
Did I skip number 5?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Number 5, Supervisor Jersey. I'm sorry. Get prepared, Supervisor Demetri Abridge. We'll be back on you in a minute.
Another Jersey one?
Yes. Supervisor Jersey's defense, this is legal, a lot of legal targeted work. So this is where she should take the high road, her and Rice, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like the committee to know I spent a lot of time reviewing all the language. This reinserts that the committee approves all facility and land leases, not just county ground land leases, but land leases and facility leases. I don't know why that language was removed. is line 922.
Page what?
18.
18. Okay, Terry.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it was deleted because the domain of leases and sales is in the Economic and Community Development Committee. And we did not change language in that committee, but there is a phrase under Section 7, Sub 1, all matters pertaining to economic development and the disposition of excess or surplus county lands, including but not limited to sale or lease of property and financing terms. And the work group thought that was sufficient to include the county grounds because that is county property.
Supervisor DeBruin, you're economic development chairman. Are you comfortable with that?
Well, I don't support the amendment, Mr. Chairman, if that's what you're asking. The land leases are under economic development, but also, unless there was a mistake in how the amendment was written, it also looks like it's deleting that disadvantaged business enterprise matters, transportation matters pertaining to DBE, would not go to Transportation and Public Works, and currently they are scheduled before Transportation and Public Works. So unless I'm misreading the amendment, it's actually taking land leases away from economic development as well as taking disadvantaged business enterprise matters pertaining to transportation away from the Committee of Transportation and Public Works. So if someone could clarify.
Okay, Supervisor Jersey, you want to clarify that?
Okay.
All that's doing is moving the numbers down.
Okay.
It was not my intention to remove that language.
Okay.
But it's clearly indicates that.
Staff can.
You want to remove? You want to remove this, Supervisor Jersey? Because where it looks.
Well,
like.
What I'd like, and I have no objection with having approves all facility and land leases under economic development. That was not my intent. I would like to see the language under, if we're going to talk about economic and community development, where it clarifies that committee is looking at all facility and land leases.
Mr. Terry Cooley.
Mr. Chairman, if this is another one of those items that the committee decides they want to have worked out and brought to the Judiciary Committee, we'd be happy to work with Supervisor Jersey to add language under economic development to say something like including county grounds.
Right. Okay, we'll let Supervisor Jersey down softly this time.
Question.
This could be facility and land leases on something other than county grounds. So, if we want to, I have no objection to working on this, putting it under economic and community development, but I think we need to clarify that we're going to review facility and land leases.
Okay.
So.
All right. Supervisor DeBruin, you be there at the Judiciary Committee to make sure the economic development is represented properly. Supervisor Mayo?
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, also if transportation do deal with some leases and do not go through economic development,
right.
And also transportation public works also do surplus. Any surplus of any standing committee parks and everything else have to be carried that land surplus. You need to clear that up because before it can go to economic development, that domain department have to deal with that surplus. So that is a lot of slippery slope in that right there.
Who deals with the surplus of supervisors? Once the property is deemed surplus, do it not fall under economic development?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If it's parkland, there's a process for declaring that non-parkland and surplus. That has to be approved by the Parks Committee and the board. Then it becomes under that land would become under the purview of the Economic Development Committee.
So when it will come, well, let's say it's under Broadridge domain. He takes and it comes to him and is deemed as surplus. Do Broadridge have to refer that to you, or he take it directly to the board?
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that it requires county board action to declare parkland unprotected land and surplus land. So it would go through the Parks Committee to the full board, and then once the full board takes action on it, then that land it's no longer protected and would be able to be under economic development. But that hasn't happened for years, Mr. Chairman. We haven't been declaring parkland surplus land for years. We've swapped some parkland at different times, but there's been no major
Okay.
Removal of park land.
So the bottom line is the surplus may go to a committee, but it comes to the board, and then it falls to economic development, and then we determine what we're going to do with it.
Depends.
Okay, what's it depend?
It's on the park.
And that's parkland. Right. Says you have some transportation land, some old remnants of expressways, and if we have a buyer, it can go at the same time. Transportation Public Works said it's a surplus. Economic development is still working on the land at the same time, and all those items will come to the board at the same time.
Without it going to economic development, to
they will both be working at the same time.
Oh, they both will. Okay. They both right. Okay. All right. All right. Everybody got that? Okay. So number five, you guys work on it? Okay. So I do make sure we gave you plenty of time to get it together. It's on you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you'll refer to page 20, starting at line 1018. And what this talks about, this amendment that I'd like to move approval for, is dealing with the scheduling of items by a committee chair. And I did talk to a few, I didn't get a chance to talk to everybody, but I talked to a few current committee chairpersons, and it would change it that the maximum amount of time that committee chair could decide to not schedule an item on an agenda would be 2 county board cycles. Obviously, our chairperson of the entire county board, our chairman, has just 1 cycle, so this would be 2 cycles. And, you know, I just wanted to mention, Mr. Chairman, that also there are many other tools and techniques. As you know, we talked about it earlier, the committee chairperson can withdraw something right before the committee if they see fit. That would be perhaps after the 2 cycles. And any member of the committee can also send something back, refer it. So I think that this is more than enough time, and I think it's a good move, and that's why I move approval.
Okay. Any discussion on this? Supervisor Liston.
For the drafter, not for
drafter. Can you speak up a little louder?
Sorry, not for the drafter of the amendment, but for staff. I'm having trouble finding it. I think there's another area where we went in the opposite direction, where there was a requirement to bring appointments forward for a vote within 2 meetings, and that's actually been struck. So I want to consider the 2 things together, because if we would expect regular items to come in 2 cycles, why would we not still expect appointments to come in 2 cycles?
Depending on what I like in terms of appointment. I mean, I never get to you.
What's that?
Talking to you.
You never get to?
Having fun. Go ahead.
I guess what I'm suggesting is I think there may be reasons why you hold something more than 2 cycles. I think there have been legitimate reasons for that. Uh-huh. Appointments or regular items. So I'm not sure that I support the amendment, but
yeah.
It also raises this other related point.
Okay. There are times when items come before you that takes a long period of time to get together, especially land and housing things in mm-hmm. terms of. We have MSOE has been off and on the agenda for maybe a year before they got it together. Glenn, would you come up and respond to that, please? You're the one who have things holding back for 6-7 months. We had the McDonald thing, and I have referred it to you, and it's. And we still haven't got it together. It's still about a year.
No, it's not.
I referred that about a year ago. And we still haven't got it together.
Mr. Chairman?
Glenn, tell us a situation.
Mr. Chairman, I think the rules do permit things to be scheduled or not scheduled in their present form. A member of the committee... I mean, if a county board can make a motion to withdraw something from committee, and if he serves notice, which could be 1 meeting, at the next meeting, he only needs a majority. I think when a majority of the board are in favor of scheduling something or not in favor of scheduling something, I think that's in the best interest of the county board. And I think right now the rule about having appointments scheduled in 2 months is unnecessary, because if an appointment has been submitted and a board member would like to bring it up, he can either make a motion to withdraw it or serve notice. I think the current rules are adequate to handle it, but I think that there are times when the committee chair or the chairman of the board wants to hold something for more than 2 months. And if the rest of the board, by majority vote, would like to take it up, they have the authority to do that now. So I believe the current rules are adequate.
Of course, you guys had me holding the McDonald thing for about a year because we couldn't get it together. So they had brought it to us, but I didn't have anything really to refer because you guys had not had opportunity to go over the situation. And when you did, they changed their mind. So then that left it out. I mean, MSOE was probably about the same kind of stuff. So, and we finally got that too. So it takes a long time for a certain kind of transaction to take place. I'm going to get to it and then get back to you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, well, the thing is, I don't see a problem with this because it's the initial referral that once the chairman sends it to the committee, then the committee chairman can take up the 2 months. But then if it goes to the committee and they want to refer it to staff or lay it over or do something in the committee process that takes 12 months, they're within their rights to do that. It's that first initial scheduling by the chair that gets it there within 2 months. So I just want to see if staff agrees with that or if that...
Okay. Steve?
I do think that in a normal course of business, an item should be scheduled so it can be heard the first time and so that a committee can take things up. And so I don't think scheduling that first time within two meetings is unreasonable. I just feel that that same result can occur through the current rules. And but I think if it's scheduled the first time and a majority of the committee wish to lay it over or refer it to Corp Counsel or something else, I think the legislative process many times takes more than 2 months to resolve what the issue is before them.
And that's what I'm saying. And that's exactly what I'm special on large issues and, you know, like the parking ramp that was referred and laid over and whatever. It takes a long time. Roberts, Professor Roberts.
I think, I guess I don't have a mic here. Can everyone hear me? I guess what I read the intent here as being, thank you, is to deny a committee chair the ability to obstruct a duly referred item. And while Mr. Bultman raises the concern about that duplicate, his argument implies an awareness of the fact that this is pending before a committee you may not serve on or be part of or, you know, actions you might not be aware of. I think procedurally what this does is just deny a chair the ability to obstruct over a long period of time. There are other remedies. Once it's not scheduled twice, if it comes the third time and it's required to be scheduled, schedule it. It comes before the committee if there, as in economic development, if there are appropriate reasons, state those reasons and lay it over. Or, you know, but I think what the current practice does is simply sort of give the chair a little more power in those committees than perhaps is appropriate.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. What Mr. Bolton was referring to about the at the full county board withdrawing an item, first of all, if it's just the first time, it takes 2/3. And if you serve notice, which colleagues of mine have done a few times, then it's a majority vote. But what that does then is it brings it right back to the county board, actually preventing a public hearing. And I think that we still need to have the committee public hearing on that. Second of all, if something was a major land deal and needed many months after the two cycles, I believe that we can refer things back for a special time. You could say, I'll refer this back and then I need the information in October. So I think there's many measures that are just a little bit more transparent is what I was looking for. So thank you.
Well, I'm going to tell you, there have been things like MSOE that I've held back for some time in order to get
things in order to be able to present it to the board. Because you present it to the board and it's half done and what have you, it's not going to go through. And then what occurs is politics didn't take place, and you don't want that. So you want to, when you're the chairman of the board, you want to present it where everything is in order, so the board can take and handle it appropriately. So I've held back on MSOE stuff. I've held back on McDonald's stuff. I've held back on the research part to make sure it's done before I brought it to the board. I think the chairman has a right to do that and should do that. It's in the best interest of the board to make sure the staff now. During the time that I held it back, staff was involved working with it, trying to get it tuned up and what have you. I didn't hold it back for any other reason, but we were trying to make sure the staff had the ability to get it together so it can be presented appropriately. Supervisor Broder?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think your actions in the cases you cited have been appropriate and a responsible exercise of your authority, but this deals with committee chairs.
Okay.
And I think that's a different matter by shade and degree.
Yeah. Okay. Supervisor Rice?
Yeah, so I understand the intent. My question is the procedural mechanism, all right? So now it's the two cycles have gone by and it's the third cycle. The agenda setting session takes place. And the committee chairman doesn't choose to put it on the agenda. What's the procedure to implement the change?
May I respond?
Supervisor Jess, did you have something there?
I did have a similar concern. I just want to point out that all of those things you were discussing are appropriate. This is the language that says properly referred. Supervisor Weishman was talking about the same thing. This has already been properly referred.
Okay.
And this gives us a mechanism. I mean, otherwise, what we're left with is all of us having to attend all of the committee's agenda set. Otherwise, you won't know something's not being placed on an agenda.
Okay.
And I don't think we want a situation where we require all of us to go to agenda setting to find out that chairmen of committees are not taking properly referred items and putting them on agendas. So I think... the mechanism for making sure that's happening may need to be tweaked a little bit here. Perhaps we should have committee chairmen identify items that have been properly referred, but they are not placing on agendas. I don't know. I'm just saying there may be some other mechanism we need to look at.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right now, when an item is referred to a committee, the committee clerk puts it on a tentative agenda, and in the agenda setting meeting, if the chairman doesn't want that item before, it's removed. Sometimes the chairman, so a properly referred item by the chairman of the board is already tracked by the committee clerks. And so let's say the committee chairman doesn't put a properly referred item on within two cycles. The next time, the third cycle, the committee clerk would inform the chairman that item is required to be on, and then if the chairman doesn't put that item on, the chairman is in violation of the statute. And I think that's a serious issue because you're violating the statute, and I think that's the chairman of the board can intervene. A previous chairman of the board, Chairman Ordnance, when she was chair, she required that all of her committee chairs put items on that were properly referred within two cycles, or she wouldn't appoint them chairman of the committee. So there's a variety of different ways you can do it, but this just codifies it and would then... So I just think you'd have the same tracking procedure you currently have, where a committee clerk and staff would inform the chairman, and then if the chairman
inform doesn't... Inform what chairman?
The chairman of the committee that the time frame is up and they have to put that item back on.
Okay, and then after that, what's the process then?
Well, then I think...
The chairman of the board...
Well,
finds out about it?
Well, what happened in the past, Mr. Chairman, I would assume that either the chairman of the committee, if they have integrity, would inform the chairman of the board themselves, but also the staff could inform the board, the chairman of the board as well.
Okay. Supervisor Dmitrievich?
Well, thank you, and I think Supervisor Rice's question is just the fact that it's because there's a change, we should probably further stipulate it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm thinking, but I did not, it's not written here, I think it would be similar to what happens when the chairman of the county board doesn't refer something for a cycle. It automatically, I mean, this to me, it would be automatic. So, I mean, you could either...
It'd be automatic what?
On the agenda.
Automatically on the agenda.
Okay.
Just like what happens, similar to when the chairman of the board chooses not to refer something, the next cycle it automatically is properly referred. I believe that, and I didn't unfortunately write that here, but I believe that should be, that's my thinking as the drafter of this amendment, that it should be automatically, you know, referred then to the committee chair.
I want to share with you there are items that come to me for referral that you don't get referred to you because it's not proper. And then what happens is I take and send it to staff for review to make sure that it's proper, and then we put it on the committee process. But not every time when something comes before me that I refer it unless it is properly submitted to me and then reviewed by staff and then submitted to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, just one other thing, and I've spoken to Supervisor Dmitrievich about it. If you adopt this process, be aware there's really no way to withdraw anything. So anything that has been referred by the chairman properly and ready for scheduling, things change. Departments ask for or apply for grants that are no longer going to be pursued. Maybe appointments come up where something was found out about something after the fact, and the chairman was doing some looking. This mechanism would mean that it would be on the agenda. There would be nothing that would be allowed to kind of fall by the wayside. So even things that the department's no longer seeking because things change. We've all had that happen, I think, in our committees. We've seen it. So when that does happen, the only thing would need to occur would have to be scheduled, and then the committee would have to place it on file. Okay? So just be aware that that's a housekeeping thing that would have to be taken care of.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I respond to that?
Yeah, you can respond to that.
Thank you. First of all, I'm not implying that anyone has improperly not referred anything. I'm not implying that. In fact, you have definitely, in the number of things you just mentioned, used your wise judgment, and other chair people have done that as well. And it has served this board well. On that matter that Steve Cady is mentioning, then the chairperson would just withdraw it. Before the committee starts, you would just withdraw it. To be on the agenda, and you have up until the second before the committee meeting starts. I've seen it happen a bunch of times.
Okay, hold on.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, the way that's drafted,
let's listen.
The chairperson does not have the power to withdraw. The chairperson has the power to withdraw something from the agenda. Prior to the roll call.
Right.
Under this change to your Chapter 1, that authority would cease on a matter that was up on the second month. You couldn't do it right before the second month.
Oh. Well, that definitely wasn't my intention, so perhaps that needs to be revisited. And one last thing, Mr. Chairman, that I want to mention. There has been a change about, I think it was Supervisor Broderick who mentioned not knowing what may have not been scheduled. That has now changed with Legistar. You can now view everything that has been properly referred to the committees on Legistar. And so I urge people to look at that. That's no longer an issue. Everything that is properly referred is on Legistar, and everybody can see it. So, thank you.
All right. Well, listen, you had something? Making all that noise, didn't have nothing.
It's all been said.
So what do you want to do?
That's what I said about a year ago. Okay.
So,
judiciary, you guys handle y'all. We found a discussion. Supervisor Johnson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
You got to fill it up this, and the members got to fill it up this. Please get this stuff straightened out, all right?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Supervisor Jersey again.
Seven's already done.
Seven was part of.
Is that rule number seven, or we got that?
We got that.
We discussed that for number three.
Okay, all right. Okay. Supervisor Lipskin and Supervisor DeBeach Average on note. Which one,